Triple B FM.
Here with Rick, and we're doing True Blues, and we've got John Earl Walker. While this is all happening, we're getting a phone call, so Tess is running out to try and get that. John, I was also very pleased, and I'll just let the listener know out there that we actually had you pay us a visit down at Cambray into the cafe the other day, where you entertained us with some great acoustic music, so I felt that we were absolutely spoilt, and I was only too happy to have you come into the studio tonight. I'll start again and say welcome. How are you, John, and how are you enjoying Australia?
Love Australia and having a great time here.
Fantastic. And you've done all the touristy things. I was just catching up. You've seen the kangaroos and all that sort of gear. Is that something that had to be done?
Well, I think I had to see the kangaroos because everybody was asking me, have you seen any yet? So we took a little trip down to the reservoir yesterday and we saw some in the wild.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, very good. I also understand that you've played a bit of some more of your style of music around the traps, and including the Semaphore Workers Club on Sunday.
Yeah, we were down there Sunday night with Christopher and having a great time.
Chris Finnan had the gig that particular day, and John went down with Tess and ended up sharing the stage, and I gather had a pretty good time. And how many encores was it?
At least about three.
Well, that's saying something pretty positive, I reckon. Tess, you'd better get a word in edgewise here just so the listeners know that we've got you in the studio at the same time. It has been pretty exciting. There's no doubt having John over here for... How long is it? It's only about 10 days?
2 weeks.
2 weeks, all told. And he's disappearing on Sunday morning, real early again.
Unless we kidnap him.
Well, I gather there's lots of other musicians who'd like to work with him, try, you know, their gigs and things like this at the same time. But I've got to just let our listener know also that, and I'm sure you've done a little bit of this in the studio before, but John, you've absolutely amazed me with the number of groups that you've played for, played with, opened up for, and how about just that list you've got in front of you, how about just reading a bit of that out just so people can get an indication of just, and I suppose also let's find out, this is going back to what sort of years, tail end of the 60s?
Going back to 1969.
Okay, right. Which was, and as, you know, I've said this before, and I'll stand corrected, but somebody's going to have a pretty, you know, big stand-up argument with me. I reckon 1969, for me, was the best year of music ever. Now, that's because I was influenced by all of those big supergroups out of the UK, and it doesn't matter if it's Led Zeppelin, but it's people like Uriah Heep and... I was just thinking, when Hendrix did All Along the Watchtower, even when Dylan did it and things like that, they were, for me, those big influential years. But you also had Creedence Clearwater coming on strong and things like that. So I just felt that, and it didn't matter what genre, you can go into people like Bread and things like that, but I just felt 69 was the best year, just one of those fantastic years.
You're right, I agree with you. It was a great time, great music, everybody pouring it out at the same time.
Yep.
If you want to hear a few of the groups, the Kinks, the James Gang, Alice Cooper, Iggy Pop, Rod Stewart and the Faces, Fleetwood Mac with Peter Green, Jimi Hendrix on the New Year's Eve Band of Gypsies band, John Mayall, Dr. John, Muddy Waters, Buddy Guy, Bo Diddley, Savoy Brown, B.B. King I filmed a pilot with. That's just a few.
That is quite staggering. I would say that anybody else would be sort of completely envious, but and I guess what that's done is sort of implant a heck of a lot of really fantastic memories in your mind, and must have taught you a fair bit with a guitar as well, surely.
Well, we had a lot of chances to jam backstage with all these people and see how they set up their amps. Every little thing was very interesting.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, look, that would be quite staggering. All right, look, we'll just take a break for a minute and play one of these guys that you have actually did when you played with B.B. King. Let me just see that particular album. I'm trying to work out. What I'll do is I'll better get a couple of these on so we can sort of make them really happen. But just tell us while we're doing this, B.B. King, when you played with him, how many years ago was that? Just to give us
that
an indication.
In 1975 in Los Angeles, we filmed a pilot for a TV show with him. And we did a couple of instrumentals and they filmed it for Channel 9, KHJ.
Okay, so... And you got to actually, you obviously had a fair rapport with the man.
Yeah, we had a great time talking with him before the filming start. And when it was ready to go, he said, John, start it off. And we went around about three times before I got him to start playing some leads.
Okay. All right. What's the track
he's like that, though, isn't he? Yeah, he gives other people a lot of opportunity.
He does. I think B.B. King has been one of those people that has just fostered. He's a little bit like Muddy Waters, always wanting to put young people in and give them a try and get them some confidence, and just really just wanted to share blues music, and that's been the story of his life. And just, yeah, it's been a great ambassador of the blues.
When I played with Muddy Waters, when we opened for him, guys in his band, before they brought him on, were saying, any of you hotshot guitar players want to jump up there? That's how nice they were.
Is that right?
Yeah.
But open invitation?
Yeah, they were asking for it.
Okay. What are we going to hear from B.B. King? What's the track title that you've picked out?
I picked out So Excited, number 7.
Righto, let's go. The master himself, B.B. King, always putting together that big fat sound, lots of really nice together brass and things like this backing him up at the same time. If you haven't experienced a B.B. King concert, it's probably getting a little bit late. I don't know if he's going to get out to Australia again, because how old would B.B. King be now? It must be 70. 81, that's right. The 80th birthday gig was not so long ago, so it'd be unlikely for him to do a gig in Australia again.
We saw him in New York in March, and I don't know. He was saying this was going to be his last tour.
He's saying it's his last tour. He may not travel overseas anymore.
Yeah. Well, I can only say that there have been some fantastic gigs even here in Adelaide over the years, and various spots, I should say, but I can remember at least 3 concerts that I've been to with B.B. King here in Adelaide, and every one of them absolutely exceptional. Real pinnacle stuff that you just have to file in the memory banks as being just really classy. And he left, or has left, I guess, the management of the band in good hands, and that's his son or his... Well, somebody like that, when he was here in Adelaide anyway, the last time, it was either his son or his son-in-law or something like that who was managing the band, and I thought doing a fantastic job.
Well, his real manager, Sidney Seidenberg, recently passed away.
Okay.
And that's going to take its toll on his, everything that he does, because he was with him forever.
Yeah. Well, John, other artists, I keep sort of... just trying to imagine myself in your shoes over the years, sort of experiencing life with all these great artists. And you were mentioning a little bit about Peter Green at one stage. Just tell us that bit of a story again.
We were backstage in Ungano's, the club that we opened for most of these groups in. And it was a little dingy backstage area for the groups to warm up a little bit. There was an old amp back there, and everybody would plug in together and just tune up and jam a little bit. And he was back there with the other guitar players and just decided to say, all right, let's go on now. So they took a little talk and said, and Peter said, shall we go do with our thing?
Did you cite that as being particularly English at the time?
Well, it sounded very English to me.
Yes, no, I don't doubt that. Peter Green was obviously, let's say, a little bit more in charge of his body back then, and that's... Tess, you can elaborate a little bit, but he's had a fair stint, hasn't he, behind, well, I won't say the brick wall, but, there's been a fair stint in a controlled...
Many illegal substances.
In a controlled environment, let's just put it that way. Mm. And I don't know if you've seen there is a DVD out of the Peter Green Splinter Group. There's an acoustic set and an electric set. It's quite good, but... and when he does his own thing, I guess he does it still very, very nicely, but it's nothing like those early days.
Well, I saw him, his original band, right, were Peter B's Lunars. Nobody's ever heard of them. That's the band he originally played with in London. And then I was there the night Peter B's Lunars were playing the first half of the show, John Mayall's Blues Breakers the second half, and obviously Eric Clapton was on the point of leaving. I saw John Mayall looking very closely as Peter B's Lunars were playing, and he was talking, to the others in the band. And I reckon he was saying to them, we're going to grab this guy for our band, because the next week he was in the band.
Okay,
yeah.
And just give us an indication, roughly what year would that have been? Mid-60s?
That would have been about 65, I reckon.
Yeah.
65, maybe 66, around that time.
Well, I must say, the as much as you've got B.B. King being sort of the grandfather of blues masters, I guess, in the States to some extent. Now, I've got to clarify that to some extent, because even though he's 80 years of age, there are other earlier pioneers, but nobody, to my knowledge, who's fostered blues music and artists as much as B.B. King. But then again, go back to England, and you'd have to say that John Mayall was exactly the same sort of person over there. How many guitarists? I mean, I don't know. I know the guy was pretty hard to get on with, from what I can gather from time to time. But he certainly pushed a lot of guitarists and gave them their starting points. And even in later years, when you go back to the return of the Blues Breakers, you've got people like Walter Trout, Coco Montoya, and people like that who've all had a big start. Come on, John, make it. Come on.
He still had another school, a later school for all the guitar players.
Yeah.
When I played with John Mayall, opening for him, it was at the time that he stopped having electric music, when he gave Mick Taylor away to the Rolling Stones.
Yep.
And we opened up the show, and then when he came on, Leslie West, who was sitting there waiting to see what kind of guitar players he was going to whip on him, and it was an acoustic thing, walked out in disappointment that it was kind of a quiet sound.
Okay, yeah. Well, I guess most people do, and even when you look at Eric Clapton, has gone from sort of being... Those days back in the UK when Clapton is God was painted on various bridges and various places because he was just a stunning guitarist, electric at the stage.
We even named our cat after him.
Yeah. What influence that man had.
That's tribute.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? But what I was leading on to is the fact that Eric, after doing so many great sort of really hot electric guitar sort of driven albums, I'm just thinking back through the Yardbirds, Cream, and then start getting to Delaney, Bonnie and Friends, and just keeps going on and on and on. But also has done some beautiful acoustic albums and some beautiful acoustic work, which will, I mean, even Layla, when you listen to that acoustically, is just another one of those beautiful songs. Clever guitarist. Yeah. All right, we can rattle on. We can hopefully keep entertaining our listener out there, but... I thought we might just play a bit of Buddy Guy, only because it was another track that I had sort of fairly close at hand. That John has... Did you open for Buddy Guy?
Yeah, I opened for Buddy Guy about three nights in a row,
mm-hmm.
and had a lot of amusing times with him.
Okay. He, and we've just mentioned Eric Clapton, Clapton has always said, certainly early on in the piece, that Buddy Guy was one of those guitarists that he felt was... worth more than what the public were giving at the time, recognising anyway. He was just an exceptionally good guitarist. And but he also is getting on in years.
Yeah, he's getting up there in the 70s now.
Yeah.
And he opened up one of his CDs with the Junior Kimbrough song, Done Got Old.
There you go. So he's admitting it. Well, anyway, let's just play a little bit of Buddy Guy at this stage. This is off the American Bandstand album. It's just because it's got a compilation. A lot of the tracks are fairly early. But we're going to play a track of his, which is just Every Girl I See. Now, that was a great one to show up his guitar prowess, so we'll just lead into that. Well, just Buddy Guy doing his best thing, Every Girl I See, off his compilation album, virtually, of American Bandstand. John, other questions I wanted to lead on to you, just such a lucky bloke being able to play with all these guys and actually mix with them, I guess chat to them on this, that and the other. But I understand that the reason you're out here now, and not even any later when we might have had slightly warmer weather, is the fact that you're going back to do some a major gig. Is it a major gig?
Yeah, sure it is. It's a nice a new festival, the Warwick Winery, on August 19th.
Okay, so...
Upstate New York.
Upstate New York, all right. So I was just trying to get a bit of a feel on these particular festivals. What sort of crowd numbers do you reckon would be at something like that, just to give our listener an indication of just what you're playing to?
Well, this one is kind of an unlimited amount of people could probably fill into this. It's in a winery.
So all right.
There's a lot of grass and a lot of space.
All right.
And it's a day of wine and blues, so can't go wrong with that.
No, you can't go wrong with that.
It's a pity we couldn't have something like that here.
Well, Tess, I've got to say that thought's crossed my mind numerous times, but I guess what you've got to do in the Barossa Valley is it's a little bit of a culture thing. Blues sometimes can be a bit of a foreign word to people who haven't realised just how broad the genre of blues is, and it's not just sort of sad, morose sort of music by any means. It's for me, it's serious toe-tapping stuff, and especially when it starts getting more up-tempo and really funky and this, that and the other. And I can see it just working so well at a winery. after all, jazz works pretty well at a winery, and blues and jazz, well, I tell you, I just feel as though they're so crossed over, it doesn't matter. Anyway, it's going to take somebody like a couple of us here in the Barossa Valley to try and promote that, I suppose. We might just have to try a bit harder. John, these festivals, now, I've just been reading the current issue of Rhythms and a couple of other magazines, and they are just plugged with festivals all the way through from every state. Some of them totally free. Now, that amazes me. Who sponsors a free festival? I mean, after all, you must have... Oh, there are key artists. There are artists there like Tommy Castro and goodness knows who else. And you think, gee, they'd be costing, you know, quite a few dollars. So how are they funded?
I think they're sponsored by products and, you know, businesses in the area and also by the city itself.
This is brought to you by Kentucky Chicken or something.
Yeah, but it's not just that. It's related industries to the music.
Yeah, okay. And it's certainly apparent as well that some of the local councils, is that the word, get on board as well, and because they realise that you're going to bring, you know...
It brings in a lot of money, all those people...
40,000 or 50,000 people, yeah.
Sleeping over for the weekend and all the restaurants and everything gets packed.
So it's really all worthwhile.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I haven't seen a free festival here in Australia. Have you, Tess? Have you ever heard of a... What's the Brisbane one called now? The
Not the Broad Beach.
Broad Beach, yeah, that's
is that
what I was...
Brisbane?
Or slightly south.
Yeah, that's not free, though.
No. I don't, as I said, I just don't know of a free festival. But, yeah, look, I guess we've still got a long way to go in Australia to push those, and we just don't have the numbers, and it's such a broad distance to cover.
Yeah, I know they have a great free, I think it's Jazz and Blues one in Chicago every year, and I think the Chicago, you know, authorities contribute to that quite largely. So.
Yeah, it's out in the park, and... The skyline is in the background. It's beautiful.
And once again, John, just give us an idea. How many people go to something like that?
Something like that, you can get easily 50,000 people there for the whole weekend.
Yeah. Boy, it's like a, you know, full-on footy match down here, like a really classy footy match, and having that sort of crowd there. And time of the day, do they run all day, or do they just run for a period of about 8 hours, 10 hours, or something like that?
They'll start in the afternoon and run into about midnight.
Yeah. Okay, so Byron's pretty much the same time. That'll start around midday and go through until about 1 o'clock in the morning or thereabouts, and then you're supposed to get a bit of sleep and come back and do it all over again.
That's right.
Fantastic. All right, the time's 3 minutes past the hour of 9. Just to break it up, we're going to have a track from Bill Perry, and it's off an album called Raw Deal. I've played the track before, but I think it's a funky track, up-tempo, etc., and just called Big Ass Green Van.
All right. You got my cell phone number. Yep. In my big ass green van.
I just think that's absolutely fantastic, that track, and I was just going to lead on and let you know that John, when he's doing his thing, is sounding not dissimilar in some respects, but certainly nicely up-tempo, and I thought we'd just play one track to emphasise that and hope that we get it right. Now, I'm just watching at what's going on this stage, and it's this blasted one particular unit. I just said that I'd probably load the wrong unit, and I'm sure that's what's just already happened, so you'll have to bear with me again. It's the one that just keeps giving us so much trouble. So we'll just go back and see if we can make it play this time. No, it's jumping. It's going absolutely crazy. So what we're going to do is take it out and put it in a different slot. It's definitely number one is out for the rest of the night. I think I'll switch the power off so I don't get caught with it again. It really is giving us a hard time. We're just loading it into a good old-fashioned DVD player that is ultra-reliable, and we'll make it happen that way, but it's just one that we've got to click up and do so many tracks. So Tess is trying to help me out, and we are doing track number one. Yep. All right, now all we've got to do is find out where the DVD player is. Let's make it happen this time.
When I'm gone.
Well, you're listening to John Earl Walker, not only in the studio, but certainly off that particular disc. And John, I've got to commend you. You know, there's it's very hard to sort of try and make money out of music these days, even with all of your expertise and all your contacts and things like that. So you're recording on Capitol. Is it still Capitol?
Well, my first recording contract was with Capitol Records way back, and now my releases are all independent.
Okay. So you've got to go and do it yourself?
That's it.
And Tess and I have had these discussions and tried to impart onto people that the fact that it's not just going down to your local record store and saying, here, look, take 10 of these and see if you can sell them or whatever. It's normally at gigs these days that you would sell most?
Well, you can sell them mostly at gigs, but there's independent distributors these days that'll get them into all the online stores, Amazon and all the rest of that.
Yep. We were talking a bit about that when you came down to the cafe the other day, and it surprised me that each time somebody downloads one of your tracks, there's a little spill for you.
Yeah, a little spill. Also, when they're when they're played on internet radio, there's a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. The other thing that I did mention a couple of weeks ago as well, we're discussing just the fact that if you go to websites of major artists, you can see the cost of their CD being anything around the $24 mark in some cases. But if you go to Amazon or any of the other major sales points, you'll find them at half or less in price. And that's always staggered me that you've got that disparity, you know, but I guess it's like bulk buying.
Well, that's exactly right. That's what they do. They buy a bunch of them, and then they decide to... they ask you what your minimum and maximum price might be.
Okay. And push them that way.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so that means look around. Don't just buy the first one you see.
But when it comes to the individual songs, they have to follow a standard formula of 99 cents or something like that. They're not allowed to play with that one.
Okay. All right. So when you said about the independent distributor... he or she obviously gets a slight cut out of this at the same time. There's no doubt about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, they get a few dollars out of a CD, say, that sells for maybe 15 or something like that.
Okay. All right. And
you're talking US, of course.
Yeah, I know.
US dollars.
Yeah, I just keep an eye on the news these days to find out just what's happening with our currency exchange rate, and you get a bit of an indication about just what you are paying. Generally speaking, and I don't mean to be disparaging to a lot of our CD suppliers here in Australia, but when you're paying $34, if you go shopping on the net, you can normally get it landed in your doorstep for half that price, and that always surprises me. I think the other thing that's becoming quite apparent is that American Post charges seem to be very, very cheap to me.
Yeah, they're not that bad.
Because when we're sending things conversely going back over there, there's a hell of a difference.
Right. They get you one way or the other.
Yeah, yeah, okay. John, we're going to play a couple of other tracks, just some ideas of your style of music and people that you like to hear and things like this as well. If you're going to chill out in your own lounge room these days, who's an influential artist these days that you like listening to?
You mean of people that are out there now?
The people that are out there, current blues artists?
Well, there's so many that it's hard to even imagine.
Yeah.
Danny Gatton is another guitar player, guitar player.
I play Danny Gatton lots. He's one of those people who I think Danny Gatton is... I think he's a fantastic guitarist. I think he was one of the best. It's just a pity that his life ended so early. But the fact is that he was rockabilly at the same time and a fantastic rockabilly artist. I've got most of the anthology of Danny Gatton. It's another great 2-CD set of just some of the best music. And I do play it quite often. I play it lots on Saturday nights when I'm doing mostly blues, rock and soul, just to sort of stir the pace up even a bit more. People like who also seem to be very popular and obviously selling a few CDs, like Tommy Castro and people like that.
I love Tommy Castro and a lot of great tracks.
We're trying to work out where the ancillary noise. It's probably not coming over the microphone, so I shouldn't say any more. But there's a fourth breathing apparatus in the studio with us who's snoring at present, and he's got four legs. So,
and a tail.
And a tail. And he's sound asleep. All right, we're going to play a little bit of Little Ed and the Blues Imperials. It's off a brand new album called Rattle Shake. and Rattlesnake, I should say. I don't know. You reckon it's Snake or Shake?
Shake.
Yeah, Rattlesnake, I reckon it is. It's just a play on the word of Rattlesnake. And Little Ed as a guitarist, your thoughts?
I like him a lot. Love the music.
Yeah. They've been going for quite some years. In fact, I couldn't say just how many years, but this this is 2006, recorded on Alligator. Would you think my comments are right? I tell most people that you can't go wrong with Alligator. I just reckon it's one of the makes that just sort of do so much to foster blues music, but not just blues. I noticed that lately there's a few interesting things being added to Alligator stables, which are just off the cuff from blues. There's some really good rockabilly.
Rockabilly's good.
Of course it is. This is a track you selected. This one you liked hearing.
Yeah, Lowell Filson, great track, Tramp.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll get Little Ed's and the Blues Imperials impression on that. And this is off that brand new album, as we said, Rattlesnake, 2006. So here we go.
I'm just a tramp on your street. You must understand. You take me in your arms, and you take care of me.
Metal and Nuriutpa are committed to community support in our region and proud to be a sponsor of Triple B FM.
When I first met you, babe,
absolutely great man, B.B. King, as we mentioned earlier on. John, just to reinforce one more time, your impressions of B.B., just from what you see from America, I mean, I will just reiterate that John's from New York. How many gigs do you get to play over there these days? Just, I'm talking about not down at the local pub or anything like that, but just generally without going to the festival sort of scenarios.
Well, there's clubs out there, but there aren't tremendous blues scene as everyone expects there to be in the biggest city.
It's quiet, or there is?
It's not quiet. It's just that there aren't that many venues that are only doing that.
All right.
So if you really wanted to play a lot, you would have to go into the neighborhood bar scene.
Okay.
Even B.B. King's own club doesn't have blues most of the time.
Hmm. Okay. And just reiterate, because I'm not sure, how many people in general in New York itself, just a rough, any idea?
Maybe about 10 million or so.
Oh, my God.
Something like that.
Half of Australia's population.
Living on top of each other.
Yeah, I can imagine. But when you talk about going across town, how many days does it take?
Well, it depends on which direction you're going. Uptown, downtown.
Right. But it takes, obviously, a long time.
It takes a while.
Yeah, okay. And we do see, obviously, just get our impressions from, if you haven't been over there, we get our impressions off the TV, obviously, with the trains and things like the path, but the commuting system in New York is pretty good?
Pretty good, believe it or not, because the streets are not that good. The streets are always crowded, so they've tested people trying to get from one point to another in different ways, if they were on a bicycle or if they were in a train or in a bus, and timed it.
Yep.
And they found that the train beat the taxi cab most of the time.
Is that right? That's telling you something about the traffic, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you'd have to be a pretty game person to ride a pushy over there, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you're risking it a bit over there.
Yeah, and that wouldn't be allowed on the freeway sort of scenario, would they?
No, they do have bicycle paths like you have some over here, I've noticed. Yep. Not that the people are respecting them all the way.
All right. When you're saying places like B.B. King and Tess, you were over there for a short period of time. Where did you go to see the music that was on at the time?
Well, as John says, there's not a huge number of places doing blues, you know. So basically we went to a small jazz club where we saw Jimmy McGriff, who is an
Your idol.
My idol from, you know, way back in the 60s. And it was a real thrill for me because we actually met him and I had my photo taken and took one of John with him. So that was great. But that was just a small club, jazz club on the Upper West Side. And where else? Well, we saw Duke Robillard at just, again, a very small venue, wasn't it?
A small venue that was basically unknown and not advertised. We found out about the gig from his website, believe it or not.
Is that right?
And he had never played there before, and just one of those type of things. It was in a hotel.
Okay, and how many people rolled up to see Duke Robillard?
Not many. So it was great for us, wasn't it? Because we got to meet him. Maybe, I don't know, 60 people or something?
Yeah, it was a small place on I believe a Sunday night or so, and not a whole lot of people there. And he would have hoped it to be, you know, a bigger crowd, but it wasn't really promoted. So that's the type of thing. I mean, he didn't know of the place before that, rolled in and did it, and who knows when again.
Gee, that's amazing, isn't it? Did he have his full band there, or was it?
He had his full band, and they played great, and they did a lot of the tracks off his new CD, Groovarama.
Groovarama, nice. Yeah. I wasn't sure whether to bring that tonight or not. I think I might even have it in the bag here somewhere along the line. But he plays with so many different genres, I guess, is the way to describe it. And I guess when he teams up with other artists, and I'm talking about people like, who are the ones that immediately come to mind?
Ronnie Earl
and the Broadcasters. Well, it's just Ronnie Earl and Duke Robillard together. That was almost, I had preconceived ideas when I went to listen to that album. I thought, boy, there's going to be a couple of egos sort of really clashing here. But it was nicely tamed and nicely put together, I thought. Junior Watson, we were mentioning before, has, or seems to have, especially when you read some of the liner notes on his albums, that he has a great influence on other guitarists. Have you ever seen the guy live?
I've never seen him live, but I've heard his records often.
But he saw Hollywood Fats.
I did see Hollywood Fats, yes.
Which I did that special on a fortnight ago. Yeah, that was quite amazing, and there's that new album out, and I didn't bring it with me. I left a lot of them in the cafe, so to speak, tonight. But Hollywood Fats just was a bit of a character. I mean, if you've seen him, he obviously, to me, from what I saw of the photos and the new expose they've done on this new double CD set, he was seriously after a lot of fun.
Yeah, he was great. And at the time I saw him in Los Angeles in the mid-70s, he was backing up a lot of artists as well. He played with Jimmy Witherspoon, I saw him with.
Okay, did that come about through the actual label that he was recording on, or do you think that was just...
I just think he had a good reputation of a great player, and a lot of people used him.
Yeah. Well, I just mentioned the fact that he was out gigging live at pretty much 8 years of age is when he first made a start to actually go downtown, and had his guitar with him. But and I think the other key fact was that his mother used to drive him to all the other great artists just so he could pick up on them straight away at that very young age. And just because he had his guitar with him, I can't remember who the artist was, he said, look, come here, sonny, how'd you like to step up on stage? And he did there and then, and was fairly impressive even at eight. You know, you knew that that was his calling. All right, the time, we've been rabbiting on a little bit. It's 23 minutes to the hour of 10, and you're with Rick, and we're doing True Blues, and we've got John Earl Walker, and we've got Tess in the studio, just reliving some of John's experiences in the music scene, particularly in the States. John, you didn't step out of the country at all to go touring?
No, not at that time, just totally in the States.
Pretty big area to sort of get around, I suppose. Much out of state, or just in the...
Well, we went down south, we went out west... So basically Midwest, you know, just basically all over the States.
Okay, so when you were opening for some of the bigger groups, you were on tour with them?
Well, basically we would just show up, and there were certain places booked, and we wouldn't even know who we were playing with until we got there.
Is that right?
A lot of the time, yes.
Gee, that'd be a surprise, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah. We didn't really care. We just knew we were going and we were playing, and that was it. That was good enough.
And that was good enough, yeah, fantastic. I've got to ask the question, was the money fair in those early days, or was it just, you know, just the experience that you wanted to be part of it that,
The money in those early days might have been on a par with the money these days. Not much less.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing, isn't it?
So the money hasn't changed that much, and that's one thing people don't realize.
All right. We're going to just have another little music break. I'm going to play a bit of Janis and one of her classic tracks, one that I've been liking a lot because I haven't had it on another album of just Janis only. This is on a compilation set. I did mention that earlier on tonight. It's just called All Blues, and it's the track called One Good Man.
Triple B FM.
Point one.